We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Street Shots Podcast. We're your hosts, Shamit Dua and Mason Ginsburg, and this is All Pelicans All the Time. Welcome to another week. It's a new year. New edition of the podcast. Mason, how was your holidays? How was your new year?
Pretty good. Thank you so much for asking. It was cold. Didn't really go anywhere south of Chicago. Spent a few days just here doing almost nothing. Standard Jew on Christmas sort of thing. And then took a drive up to Detroit, or the Detroit suburbs where my girlfriend is from, and spent some time with her family. No real crazy New Year stories. Just went to hang out with some of her friends from home and got back to Chicago yesterday. What about you?
Just stayed in New Orleans, enjoyed the nice 70-degree weather. You know, people talk about having a white Christmas. Screw all that noise, man.
It's serious. It's overrated.
I want to be out there in my shorts on Christmas and in New Year's, just not having to worry about the cold at all. I will say the weather was like a bit dreary in the sense that it's the last week or so it's been rainy, foggy, cloudy, that kind of stuff. But other than that, the temperature has been absolutely amazing. I think it's supposed to dip down into the 50s tomorrow. It's about as cold as it's going to get, and then it's going to jump back up to the high 60s and 70s. So tomorrow should be a little bit brutal.
It got up to 40 today, which is sweet.
That's your own fault.
Yeah, it is. No arguments.
Do you have any New Year's resolutions?
Like everything in life, I procrastinate, so check back with me a little later. But
I'm going to take that as a no.
Yeah, so the answer is no.
Cool.
I'm sure there are. There's always an answer there, but I haven't taken the time to really think about it. But
that's okay. Then that means to you, the new year is just another day. It's just not anything, you know. It's just another day in your life. You're not. You don't have to turn things around just because, you know, we made it around the sun.
Is that question just one of those stereotypical things, or do you have a list that you make out every year? Is that a ritual for you?
Oh no, I don't really care. I mean, like, I might spend some thought on it just because there people talk about it all the time. So if someone's like, oh, what's your New Year's resolution? I'll be like, to get in less internet fights.
And it's funny because that's kind of, at least for in my perspective, that's kind of what Yom Kippur is for Jews. And it's that's the Day of Atonement. And it's not really the day to make resolutions, but it's kind of like the day where you think about how shitty of a person you've been over the past year and how you can kind of turn things around and make things better, or at least incrementally better over the next year. So New Year's to me feels like a rehash of that, and I just don't really want to think about it.
Yeah, fair enough. And like my take is, you know, you should be trying to improve yourself at every time. So like there really shouldn't be a particular day you need to wait for. You know, if you feel like you got to work on something, then work on it. And if you don't want to work on it, great. That's on you. I mean, it's your life. You don't have to wait on a calendar day to tell you, like, hey, this is when we change things.
Agreed.
Speaking of changing things, let's talk about the Pelicans.
Man.
That was pretty weak.
Man, that was weak. Was a decent lead. But then it was just kind of silence, and then let's talk about the Pelicans. So
I froze, you know. It was too much pressure. It was like, man, it's like Austin Rivers when he does a crossover, and he's like, wow, he just shook the crap out of the guy, and he gets to the rim, and he has, like, no idea what to do with the ball, and, you know, he just flings it and goes falling into the crowd. That was me. That was the Austin Rivers crossover of a segue.
I'm surprised you used Rivers, because you could use – half of this roster right now.
Who is a person on this roster that can cross someone up?
Wait, what's that?
I said you can't use this roster because there isn't anyone on this roster that can cross someone up outside of like Drew. And yeah, I mean, now Alfred's healthy now, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, you've got to be able to cross someone up to be able to turn the ball over afterwards, I guess. And so yeah. That's the issue. Man, that's depressing. But that works.
There we go. I feel like I redeemed that a little bit.
Yeah, let's go with that.
So the Pelicans, since our last recording, they flip-flopped a little bit, but none of it has been inspiring. They got Peyton back for the last two games, and he's been a breath of fresh air, but all the other problems that existed prior to getting him back still exist. Would you say that's accurate?
The biggest problem, sure. I mean, I think you instantly, and to be fair, and I think you and I both said this recently, we both understand the problem is on the defensive end, not the offensive end. That said, that end is still improved. I mean, it's shared this stat earlier this morning with you guys that, you know, Peyton has the second best individual offensive rating in the NBA behind Will Barton, who's played two games. And so obviously minutes are still an issue for Peyton as well, as far as small sample size is concerned. But I mean, the offense has been better with him, even though it was already good. It's been better. And so that said, the issues on the other end of the floor, again, only in a couple of games since he's been back, still have not really gotten noticeably better. So in that respect, yes, I do agree.
Yeah, I mean, so we had the Dallas game where AD bounced back. He had a monster night. We had, was it Houston afterwards? Mm-hmm. And Houston was a tough loss. It was a close loss. James Harden lit the whole team up. Defense as a whole was all right. Pels did all right. But James Harden was an animal, and we, again, it was just a depth issue. We had trouble converting throughout the game. That's my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, this is stuff that we've been yelling about from the rooftops for a little while now. And, you know, it's, you can look at some of the names on the roster and say, hey, yeah, AD's got help. And you know what? He absolutely does on the offensive side of the ball. On the other side, he just simply does not. I mean, I will hand this to you. You heard me at the beginning of the season, and I will eat crow on this one. I was pretty confident in Solomon Hill being a valuable defensive contributor for the Pelicans this year. He had good on-off numbers a couple of years ago, and then when he got, even though he got hurt last year, hamstring injuries are generally injuries that you have a full recovery from, so I wasn't really concerned about lingering effects. Look at, I mean, Chris Middleton's the most recent example of a similar injury, and he's back to where he was before his injury, and so and better than that. And so Hill's not a guy that, obviously, he isn't someone that either of us think is ever going to really fulfill his contract, but I really did think he was going to help defensively, and he has the worst individual D rating on the team for among their regular contributors. And
but
so
at the same time, like, I get that, but watching him, I feel like he's not great. I'm not going to try to sugarcoat it, but I do think he's better than some of those other guys. Simply, yes. You know, just I think he's smarter. I think he's a little bit more physical. He can do a little bit more things in terms of if generating those steals and blocks, even though they aren't often. And I think his individual defensive rating is just skewed by the fact that he is another victim of just absolutely trash lineups around him.
Yep. That's totally fair. And I don't mean to say he's
because if he spent, you know, like 80% of all of his possessions on the floor with AD and Drew, like Tim Frazier does, like how often is Frazier on the floor without either of those guys?
It's
never, right?
And, sure.
And so if he had that benefit, when he was in the starting lineup, the starting lineup had a pretty positive net rating. So, you know, it's like solo is solo at this point. Can you design a good lineup around him? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's in the Pel's best interest to try to accommodate him in that fashion, because it's solo. You want to design the best lineup possible, not the best lineup around solo.
And fair point. I mean, individual offensive or defensive ratings are going to be skewed based on the lineups you're playing with. That's very, very fair. And in Solo's defense, he hasn't been a train wreck like some of the other guys defensively, but like when you're saying that he's significantly better than the other options at his position, like that's a problem in and of itself.
Yeah, I mean, that's a product of not his individual skill, but just how bad those other guys are.
Right. It's the same thing we see already with the on-off between Elfrid Payton and Tim Frazier. I mean, that Payton is not an all-star, but he's so much better at playing that pure point guard position than anyone else on this Pelicans roster that it shows up almost instantly. And so it's just frustrating. This team has so little defensive talent outside of their two, you know, first team all defensive players from last season. At full strength, they can be and you pointed this out in an article you wrote last month. At full strength, they can be a fine defense, average to slightly above average is where they were last year after they got Nico and after Boogie went down. Strength of schedule aside, but it's just, I mean, you've got, you're missing pieces and people are playing out of positions, and it's just kind of a mess, and it snowballs, especially when one of those two key cogs is out of the lineup and things just go to hell.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that when you talk about them being average or above average, it's like when you get all those guys healthy, the guys who play a lot of minutes, AD and Drew, and then everything that's in between, those guys, you know, are going to carry the lion's share of the defensive work, and I think they are good enough to lift it to the average or slightly above average position. I think no matter what, when those guys aren't on the floor, it's just going to be bad. So it's like, it's not so much as improving the worst pieces on the Pels team. It's about giving them less opportunities.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I was looking today, I mean, even though the lineups with AD and Nico are, I mean, obviously they've been great offensively, but even defensively, they've been 63rd percentile according to Cleaning the Glass. And so like it's 108 points per 100 possessions, which is fine. It's in this day and age, it's nothing special, but it's fine.
Wait,
and so
what, how are they offensively?
93rd percentile. So they're plus 8.2 net, 116.20 rating and 108 D rating. So, I mean, it can work, but the fact that they need all these pieces healthy to be even just passable in aggregate on defense is a problem. And it's one that a lot of fans are taking notice of and saying, hey, should they have tried to fix this before the problem got so bad? I mean, there were indications that this was going to be an issue from in the first few weeks of the season. And I mean, the question is, could they have known better? And really, if we roll back the clock a month, would they have done something differently than they have now? Or is this a situation where they, you know, just are trying to conserve assets for whatever big thing they may or may not have planned coming down the stretch of before the trade deadline?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we won't know. I think at this point you can only look forward. I do want to interrupt this discussion just a little bit to do another live reaction. The Bulls have traded Justin Holiday to Memphis for draft picks.
Huh. That is interesting.
I don't think it's so. Shams is reporting it.
It's got to be 2 seconds, right? If it's draft picks, it's not a first and a second. It's got to be 2 seconds.
Yeah, I don't think the Memphis is giving up a first round pick for a $4 million expiring player.
Yeah, but it's gonna have people calling, especially if you're or Pelicans fans, but in particular, if they traded 2 second round picks for Justin Holiday, a guy who's top 10 in the NBA in 3-point percentage, I think, and the Pelicans are just kind of sitting around still. I'm not saying they should have. We haven't even seen what the compensation is. But I'm not saying they should or shouldn't have traded for Holiday yet, but regardless, there are going to be people upset.
And I mean, like, so last night it was reported that Caspi and Garrett Temple got into an altercation, and perhaps this is just Memphis. You know, Memphis tried to acquire Oubre, and they didn't succeed because of that debacle. Yep. But, again, it's a similar wing-type player, and then Memphis has been dead set on adding wing talent this year. They've added Kyle Anderson. They added Temple. They brought in Caspi, who, based on this move, might be on his way out. They brought in Holiday. They were going after Oubre. So, you know, Memphis long has been criticized for not having enough wings, and yet here they are. You know, they've now added 3 wings, all 3 of which you could say are better than anything the Pelicans have had in a long time. Mm-hmm. And so whether or not it's fair to criticize the Pelicans for not going after these guys, it just shows you that, you know, Memphis, another resource and cap-strapped team, has been able to acquire said players.
Yeah. Oh.
So I think, you know, it just – and it might be that, okay, the Pelicans are you know, holding on to their assets for something bigger. Something better. Like, Justin Holiday isn't going to swing the needle. Yeah. Not by himself, no. Yeah. Although I was a big fan of a scenario, you know, if nothing ever panned out. I know you don't like attaching the pick to Solomon Hill, but, you know, attaching it with him and Wes to get back Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday, I feel like, you know, clearing the books a little bit and getting back 2 useful players that kind of fit this team. I was a fan of that, but I can definitely see why the Pelicans are aligned with your thoughts that you don't want to attach the pick there for something like that. You want to move it for something bigger.
And we have the deal, and this is interesting because I wonder if Memphis will flip either of these guys. Granted, they're maybe barely rotation players to a third team, but it's 2 second round picks, and it is. It's their next 2 years second round picks, so that's interesting. It's 2019, 2020, and they're trading also Marshawn Brooks and Wayne Selden. So I don't really think Marshawn Brooks is going to move the needle for anybody, but Wayne Selden, I mean, would he get minutes over any other Pelicans wing, in your opinion?
Right now, no.
Yep. Okay.
No, not at all. Because okay. They trust Solomon more than they trust Wayne. He's not that better of a shooter. I just like, again, he's just one of those guys. I don't think he provides anything, and you might as well give those minutes to Kenrich, which they've been doing sporadically.
Yeah. I mean, Wayne Selden, he's 35.7% in his career from 3-point range. So
that doesn't mean anything to me. It honestly doesn't. He's not changing the defense like the way people defend AD and Drew in any type of way.
Yeah, that's I would agree with that. And so I just Yeah.
You think they got the right Brooks traded?
I sure hope so. Actually, I hope not, because that would be even crazier.
Yeah.
Cool. Interesting.
Well, anyway, okay. fun little trade, fun little relevant thing because it's in the Pelicans division. And yeah, fun stuff. But kind of going back
to the Pelicans, we talked about the Rockets a little bit. They beat the Timberwolves without AD,
making that their first win without Davis since December of 2017. So you have to go back a whole calendar year to, you know, have an instance of where the Pelicans won without Davis. That's a lot. And yeah. And then you know, the Pelicans had a game in Brooklyn where it looks like they forgot they were playing a game until the fourth quarter, and it was a total nightmare from an execution standpoint, from a rotation standpoint, from just everything. It was a total meltdown. And, you know, when the Pelicans are losing, it's easy to sort of get caught up in hyperbole and be like, ah, the world is ending and all of that. But, like, that game was truly a disastrous display.
Yeah. I mean,
for what ended up being a 5-point game, I would say it was one of the worst games I've seen them play this year, and they've had some bad games.
Yeah. I mean, it was trending like the Miami Heat game for a long time, which is probably would you agree that was the worst game they played all year, as the game against Miami?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, so there was a possession, and this one stood out to me the most. There was a few things that really stood out to me that bothered me. One was there was that possession where the Pelicans run down the floor and no one knows who's guarding Damari Carroll. No one. And they leave him open for 20 seconds. It's insane. Like, they just do not know their defensive assignments at all. And then, you know, Coach Gentry, before the game, he was asked by a couple reporters about how Jahlil is doing, and, you know, he had a lot of good things to say about Jahlil. How he's been working relentlessly in practice, he's provided good minutes. I asked him about this after the Timberwolves game. I was like, hey, you guys were forced to start him on the spot. You know, how important has he been, and how has he been progressing? And he's like, yeah, he's absolutely been progressing. And, you know, all these good things to say about Jahlil. He doesn't register a single minute. Now, granted, the Nets were going small, so our counter to that going small was going small. And how small did we go? Well, we put out Tim Frazier, Frank Jackson, Etuan Moore, and Darius Miller next to – it was Davis for a little bit, and then they switched Davis with Randall. A total disaster.
You didn't even get to my least favorite lineup of the night, but that's not to say that's good.
Okay, yeah, I don't know which one you're referring to, but we'll get to that in a second. But, I mean, so typically, you know, like, why has the NBA started to go small? It's not because there's something inherently better about going small. It's usually because teams, their most talented players are smaller perimeter-oriented players. And so, especially in an era where the ability to take and make three-point shots is important, and then having guys who are great at ball handling and breaking defenses down, the more guys you have like that, the more pressure you can apply on a defense, and there's just more space to cover. Now, of Tim Frazier, Etuan Moore, Frank Jackson, and Darius Miller, which one of those guys can create their own shot? Right? No one.
I was going to say something if I disagree with you, but I do not.
They just can't. Tim is the only one that can create for others. Okay, fine. But he's not that great at it, especially when the other three are those guys. And then, you know, who amongst them can rebound? Tim's a decent rebounding guard for his size and his position. He's scrappy. He comes up with some. He'll have nights of 5 to 6 rebounds. Decent, and decent amount of time. So, like, he's not the worst rebounder. He's definitely not making your rebounding a plus. But those other guys, I tweeted about this today, Darius Miller, for his position is in the zeroth percentile. That means he is the worst rebounder flat out for his position, okay? Etuan Moore is in the second percentile. That means 98% of people in the NBA who play his position are better defensive rebounders than he is. Frank Jackson is the ninth percentile, so 91% are better than he is. And then, meanwhile, you know, Brooklyn is playing Ed Davis, who's one of the best offensive. I think he leads the league in offensive rebounding rate. And he's done that his whole career.
Yep.
And so you have all these guys that can't create their own shot reliably. They can't rebound. They certainly can't defend. Frank is a solid one-on-one defender, but like when it comes to off the ball, he's a rookie. You know, he doesn't know how to navigate screens, and he doesn't know his rotations the best, and I can't fault him for what he doesn't know, but like, I can fault the staff for putting him in that situation. Why are you putting him in that lineup? Why is he not handcuffed to AD and Drew? You know, like, why would you put him in a position where you're basically designed to fail? And I know none of the coaching staff thinks that, like, yeah, this lineup is going to fail. We're just going to put this out there for fun. But it's like, what do you think about these lineups? Like, lineups that feature Darius Miller at the power forward, lineups that feature Solomon Hill at the power forward, lineups that feature Wesley Johnson at the power forward, all of those lineups are, like, I think, I forgot what the exact number was. I think the exact number was, like, 8th percentile overall defensively, or, like, 1st percentile, one of the two. It was really bad. The bottom 10% of all lineups that have played in the NBA that, you know, reaches like the bare minimum of the possession threshold. Point is, they're bad. Going small, like, hasn't worked for the Pelicans. And by that, I mean, is, you know, AD's your center. Jalil's your center. Chek is your center. I can't go in, like, even when you play Nico and Julius, like, that's small, in my opinion. You're going small, and it doesn't work because there is, you don't have that one guy that's just going to sit there and eat rebounds.
Yeah, I was just, not mentioning it, I was kind of running through some of their other wings that have played the four with AD and seeing if anything's kind of worked. I mean, Solomon Hill kind of has worked next to AD, but that's the possession count is so small there, it hardly matters. So,
yeah, and you're putting that, you know, like next to AD, which is fine. But here's a funny thing. Of people who have registered minutes at the power forward, Etuan Moore shows up. So here's a complete list, and like most of this makes sense, even though, you know, like the results haven't been pretty. So like Anthony Davis has registered minutes at power forward, of course, right? Chek Diallo, okay. Darius Miller, I don't like it, but okay. Etuan Moore, what? Julius Randle, Kenrich Williams, again, what? He's a rookie. Nikola Mirotic, Solomon Hill, and Wesley Johnson.
That's via what?
This is clean the glass.
Okay.
Clean the glass, excellent resource. Ben Falk is amazing. I think he just got married, so congratulations to him. Excellent resource. But again, like, oh, I got the numbers. So they are 11th. So the lineups that feature one of Darius Miller, Solomon Hill, or Wesley Johnson at power forward, overall, their efficiency differential is 11th percentile. They're a negative 9.7 per 100 possessions, which is horrendous. And then they're first percentile when it comes to defense. So that's 119.3 points allowed per 100 possessions when one of those guys is a power forward.
And the flip side of that too is, like, if you're going to do that, and, you know, as much as you and I have bashed about the depth of this team, if you're doing it because you really have no other options, it is what it is. But this team, not only has Okafor come on strong recently, and against a guy like Ed Davis, I don't understand what other matchup you're looking for to use him than off the bench against a guy like Davis. And then also, whatever you think about Diallo, he's been fine this year. I mean, he's probably been one of the highest variance type of guys for them this season, but he's had some good moments. And if you're talking about playing a Darius Miller at power forward, like why is Diallo or Okafor a worse option? If the Nets were playing five out all game long, like Milwaukee Bucks style, I get it. But I don't get it with the guys that Brooklyn was playing off the bench.
Okay, so now here's the worst part about this, right? So, okay, you go small, you want to increase your offense. So their offense is fine. It's at a 51st percentile, 109.6 points per 100 possessions. A lot of numbers coming at your ways, guys. Sorry if you can't, process all of them. I understand that. I'm going to just try to keep it a little bit simple. Their offense is fine. It's mediocre. It's average, right? But get this. They are the worst. So when any of those three are playing power forward, they are the worst in the NBA when it comes to fouling. They have the highest foul rate. And they are, again, only eighth percentile when it comes to rebounding. So it's like very key basic elements of defense that you're just incapable of doing when you put all those guys together. And, it's a miracle that when AD and Drew are on the floor together that they can cover all these deficiencies. Like, imagine if they had not these guys.
Yeah. And I can think of a specific example from last night's game. I remember very, very vividly. I think they had three guards in. So the lineup I was talking about a few minutes ago was when they had Drew, Frank Jackson, and Ian Clark at the same time. For the life of me, I cannot explain what the point is of having those three guys playing together. And I'm pretty sure that was with Julius Randle at the five. I think AD was sitting at that point.
No, I think so too.
And there was a possession where Ed Davis was in, got an offensive rebound over Julius Randle. It was a long rebound. So Randle didn't do an okay job boxing out, but just luck. I mean, it's just luck sometimes. And then the second time he got another offensive rebound over one of their smaller players, and the smaller player fouled them. Or before he collected the rebound, there was a foul, loose ball foul. And then in the third possession, there was just a blow by for an easy dunk. And it's just like, how much more do you need to see to make a change there? I mean, the same things were going wrong. And that's the frustrating part, I think, is like if you kind of get lucky with a lineup like that, they make a couple threes and they tread water, whatever. But they were struggling so much and so consistently that I just didn't understand why you don't make a change.
You know who else didn't understand why there wasn't a change? Lauren Holiday, who was in my mentions on Twitter.
Yeah. That was interesting. I haven't seen her comment on anything.
I think the coolest part about the comment was she was like, "I love my husband. I wish he was more aggressive."
Yep.
That was, I mean, she is one of the best.
She's an athlete.
She's one of the best U.S. soccer players of all time. So, like, she's definitely a fiery competitor. But, I feel like a lot of people are wondering, what is it going to take to see change? And I want to use that to kind of talk about the coaching first and then, maybe touch on the front office and kind of the team structure as a whole. But do you, for this season, we know we've been shorthanded in terms of injuries. We know we haven't had the right players in the right spots. But despite that, do you feel like the staff, and I'm not going to put this on Gentry as a whole because it is a staff decision, do you feel like the staff has done a good job of optimizing the people they have, of making the right decisions when it comes to rotations and minutes?
I don't think they've done a bad job. Last night was as frustrated as I've been about rotations in a while. And it does feel sometimes like Gentry will try certain things to see if it works and then doesn't really care if it works or not. And then just kind of try something different. And, or if the team overall is winning games he won't mess with something, even if the results for something within that game were pretty clear cut as not successful. So, like, I think about when how for the amount of time during which Wesley Johnson was starting for the Pelicans, and like that, he it took him a while to abandon that, and it was a well, and the net rating numbers for Wes in the starting lineup versus pretty much any of the other starting lineups was awful. And so you can argue counterpoint, that means the bench was better, and so maybe that's why the team was winning games. But just overall, the difference was so drastic that I think it took him a little too long to abandon it. And then he's tried other guys off and on, like Frank, and then Jahlil, and then Jahlil actually looks like he's playing well. But then it
kind of begs the question, why did it take this long to get to Jahlil?
Yeah.
So it's like Chet got his run, and I understand from a coaching perspective, you don't want to be reactionary in the sense that, like, if you're trying something, you want to give it a little bit of a run to fully evaluate if it, you know, what its strengths and weaknesses are. Like, with the West thing, you know, it got that 10-15 game run. Chet got his little run. But again, I don't think Chet's run was consistent because, you know, for the longest time, he wasn't getting minutes either, right? And so on a night-to-night basis, my complaint is, you know, you say they haven't been bad, which on the balance, they probably haven't been. But my biggest complaint is, on a night-to-night basis, you do not know what they're going to do with their rotations. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of coaches, they have patterns, right? Whether they want to fully stagger, they want to do hockey subs, whatever the case that may be, you know, there's consistency to it. Well, it just seems like, to me, and this is purely anecdotal, I'll probably have to get with Patrick on this to look at the rotations chart in full, but it seems to me like they just go with the game flow, and based on how the game's going, they're like, you know what, maybe this person will be a good fit, and I would love to have a little bit more insight onto what their substitutional decisions are, or just, you know, rotational decisions, or how they reach the conclusions they do, because sometimes, like, for me, like, they make no sense, you know, and it's easy to say from a results-oriented perspective that, you know, they put in these guys, it's not working, you're like, okay, this is stupid, this didn't work, and we probably would not say that if it did work over the six-minute stretch those guys played. I think, you know, we do get caught up in the results-oriented nature of this, but at some point, the results are what they are, and if you have hundreds of possessions or even 1,000-plus possessions of certain lineup combinations or certain patterns, and you're like, this just hasn't worked, why do you keep going back to this? Like, I think it's fair to question that.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, this is something I wrote about about a month into the season, and the funny thing is, I said this is why things are going to get better, is because the rotations will start to make sense. Because Gentry spending the first and not the whole coaching staff spending the first month or so of the season trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. And obviously injuries play a part in that. When Peyton goes down four games into the season, you've got to kind of twerk things on the fly. And that's not easy, especially when they're so thin at that position. But I wrote about, you know, Randall's on-off numbers looked terrible. And it was mostly, at that point, I think it was still early, but I think it was mostly because of who he was playing with. And he played either in the starting lineup when AD was hurt, or he played with the crappy bench unit. And so it just kind of looked like he was overall, Gentry is still trying to figure out what made sense, who worked well with who, and this was going to get better because all the Pelicans lineups that had over a certain number of minutes had good net ratings together. And that hasn't happened. And what do you want to call it? I mean, they haven't been perfect on the injury front. Obviously, the Nico being sidelined has hurt them significantly, and the second injury for Peyton as well. But there hasn't, you're spot on, because that it hasn't gotten better. There is still no consistency, and part of it is the lack of depth. But also, I mean, if you find guys who really have been able to contribute consistently, like you said, like Okafor, I don't know. I feel like he's.
I mean, like, imagine imagine you're Jahlil Okafor, right? And you've been working your tail off, and coach is saying you're working your tail off, and you're doing all the right things. And when you're on the floor, you're doing what you're supposed to do. Like, he's been asked to play up high on defense. He plays high on defense. He's running back and forth, in transition. He's getting back down. He's boxing out. He's grabbing offensive rebounds. He's doing what his role is. And yes, he's been you know, his physical capabilities have limited him, you know, and from a defensive perspective, he's been a little bit foul prone, and that's who he is. But on the balance, he's filled his role to the T. And imagine you've been doing all that, and you just don't know if you're going to play one night or another night. And then you have to ask yourself, like, what more do I have to do to earn this?
Yeah, and imagine, and I can't remember if it was Gentry or Monty at this point, but I think about what would have happened with Ajinsa if they had abandoned him just because he got into a little bit of foul trouble.
Jeez.
He would have never played, and I realize he never really played after his injury.
Yeah, that's one thing is, like, I don't think Okafor has been worse than Ajinsa than in any stretch.
No,
I feel like he's been more useful because, like, he doesn't look like a goof out there.
he actually has a post game instead of just post game being I'm 7'2"
and I'm gonna shoot, you know, 20 footers, which is fine. He's good at those, but, you know, there's a reason Jason and I call him Jawzilla, because, like, when he gets the ball in the paint, everyone is frozen in their tracks. They're like, what the hell is this guy going to do? We don't know. Do we send a double at him? And they send doubles at him, and you know, it leads to kickouts and threes. And if not, they don't send a double at him. It's like, good luck, because he will get a shot at the rim.
Yep. Yeah. So, you know, I think the kind of consensus here is that it hasn't been a dumpster fire as far as the decisions being made by the coaching staff, but also certainly room for improvement, I think, is the...
I think there have been plenty of head-scratching ones.
Yeah, yep.
But, so, now I want to change tracks a little bit. Okay, you know, the coaches are put in a position to pick between, you know, a rock and a hard place, between Tim Frazier and Ian Clark, and, you know, all these situations. You're like, okay, why do they even have to make those choices? And they can only do so much with the hand that they're dealt. And who dealt that hand? Well, no one other than Dealer Dell. Mm-hmm. Right? So,
yep.
Is it fair? You know, Tom Havistro wrote an article today where he went at the Pelicans organization pretty hard. He basically says that the Bobcats, who went like 7-7, they had like the 7-win Bobcats, missed out on Anthony Davis, but ever since then Charlotte has had more wins than the Pelicans have had since Davis was drafted, and the Pelicans have just utterly failed Davis. And, you know, it's been 7 years, and the results are what they are, right? I don't agree with some of the directions he went in that article, particularly regarding, like, the health stuff and the med staff and all of that. But, you know, you guys should read it and check it out for yourself. But at the end of the day, you know, after 7 years, the results are the results. The Pelicans are a below 500 team in all in the 7 years that they have had Davis. Dell has been in charge the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Is it time for a change? Wait, so, yeah, answer that first, and then, you know, I'll ask some other stuff.
I think we agree on the column itself. I didn't like some pieces of it, but the overall message is pretty tough to argue with. So, like, I think some of the med staff stuff was exaggerated. I think, there's obviously...
some of that's, like, you know, the liberty, like, creative liberty he took as a writer to, you know, convey his point a little stronger.
Yeah. And I still remember to this day that he absolutely wrote about Cousins' workload before his Achilles tear. And that's one of those things that you can never fully know for sure. But, it's just tough to say with stuff like that, whether or not it played a part. But, regardless, I mean, I think we all knew that last season demonstrated the first real step forward that this organization has really taken since AD joined the Hornets / Pelicans. I mean, you can call the 2014-2015 playoffs a step forward, but that was 45 wins is nice, but it's also pretty, it was pretty damn fluky they even made the playoffs. I think, they had that crazy shot over the Thunder, from AD to beat the Thunder. And even then, there was Thunder had some serious injuries, and obviously the Pelicans, as Tom said, have been hit with a ton of injuries. But you needed another step forward this year, and I think everyone knew that. I mean, moving.
Do you think they drank too much of their Kool-Aid after the playoffs?
Yes. And this is kind of a mini tangent I went on a week or so ago, or maybe 2 weeks ago. They finally had a good string of luck for a couple months. No one really got hurt. Their strength of schedule was not super difficult. And they went on a serious run with their new core. And that's great. But they projected that forward. And to an extent, all of us did too. But I just don't think that they took the necessary precautions to kind of have a fallback plan if things didn't go as perfectly as they went to end last year. And so easier said than done, again, with the hand that the team was dealt via some of the contracts that were signed over the past couple of years. But you can clearly see how it's impacted the team thus far.
Yeah, I mean, like, the whole talk this summer was like, oh, we may not be a better team. You know, they hedged their bets pretty clearly, but they were like, we're different and we might be deeper. And I'm not sure that's the case. I don't know if that's the case. I don't know if they really truly believe that, and they were just kind of hoping that would be the case, and therefore they didn't make too many changes. I don't know if it's because of a lack of opportunity to make changes. There's lots of factors in play, but the bottom line is I don't think the roster is up to par. I don't think it's well put together by any means. I think it's a product of taking players who are available and undervalued throughout the league, and you're just kind of making talent plays where you can around the edges because there's little opportunity to do stuff later because you know you're saving your guns for the bigger changes. And so when you do that, you kind of have to just take the island of misfit toys, not in the sense like with the Lakers, but it's like you're taking deeply, deeply flawed players in hopes that they kind of fit this vision that you're trying to create. And to me, that was like this whole Gentry ball thing. They're trying to play fast-paced offense, and those players really are truly suited for that. Works. And I think it works. I think that's a great offensive system, especially when everyone's healthy. But I think something that we all kind of overlooked is like, shoot, what else do these guys do?
Yeah, and I think one of those things that we overlooked that I think everyone overlooked this, including the Lakers fans who knew his limitations on defense, was Julius Randle. And I'm still to this day, I am not saying that signing Julius Randle for $9 million in a vacuum is a bad deal. It's a good deal. He is better. I think he adds more to a team than I think he's worth that money easily. That said, on this Pelicans team, we said, oh, perfect third big. And that I still think that's pretty close to being true. He is a perfect third big for this team.
Yep.
With Nico and AD starting. That said, suddenly when you have one injury, he's now in the starting lineup with AD, and we've seen what kind of issues that causes on both ends of the ball, but mostly on defense.
Yeah, even that, but then you're like, who's behind him? And then right. that's a bigger problem. It's like, all right, AD and Julius, for all the issues they have, they're still positive together. You know, you put him with Drew, like, they can still beat teams. He's still really talented. He's still putting up those numbers. He's still, you know, like, it still works. But then it's like, all right, when you have to separate him from AD, then what? Who else is there? And it's like,
where I was going with that was like, what if you, instead of giving Julius Randle the entire non-tax MLE, if you brought a guy like, I don't know, Ed Davis and one other guy, I really don't have a guy off the top of my head right now. But if you have those, if you add those two guys instead of Randle, is it more talent overall? Nah, probably not. But does it make more sense for this team? I think with the benefit of hindsight, probably does. So it's just, it's all these things. I mean, it also shows how tough these decisions are, right? I mean, doing this job's not easy. That's why, you see a lot of turnover, and so few people are really consistently successful as far as being a franchise GM. But you know, you've got to nail these things, and especially when it's such a big season coming up like this one is for the Pelicans.
So I guess my question, you know, early on is like, is there time for a change? Mm-hmm. And you know, with both regards to the coaching staff and the front office. So I'm not going to ask if there's time for a change. What I will ask is, do you think the coaching staff makes it intact to the end of the season?
I do. I'm just thinking about, so I think Gentry lasts the season because there's so many other places that I think you can put more blame on than him. I'm not saying he's done a perfect job or even a good job this year, but I think he did really well last year, and I think that's earned him a little benefit of the doubt this year.
Benefit of the doubt is they extended him,
right? And so I just don't see a compelling case or a way that creates meaningful change for this team to let him go midseason. I mean, we have yet to hear a peep about the team not liking him as the coach. I feel like by all accounts, and you would know this better than I would because your proximity to the team in New Orleans is everyone thinks he's doing a great job. I don't know if that holds for the rest of the coaching staff. But I also don't know if I've seen an assistant coach get let go mid-year. So I don't think I wouldn't expect that. Without the head coach going as well. So I do think they last the
year. No, didn't like some of the organizations, they like, I think it was like Vogel, they fired like some of his assistants to kind of keep him in check. And like, I don't know, there was been a couple organizations recently where they fired the assistants as kind of like a proxy war. I think they did that in the Bulls with Hoiberg. They kind of like got rid of some of his assistants and they're like, you know what, this is what we're doing. And to be honest, like from what I know is like Dell had a big, big hand in bringing in some of the assistants as well. So it may not have been handpicked by Gentry. So that I don't know. My thing is like, this is a really tough month coming up.
Yep.
Really tough. And there's a tough road trip. They hit 5 on the road. It's like Minnesota, the Clippers, Golden State, Portland, and then Memphis, I think. All really tough teams to play, and the Pelicans have just been flat out awful on the road. There's a chance they can go 0-5 on that road trip. A big chance, especially if someone's injured. So at that point, you are looking at a nearly irrecoverable season, and you're right up against the trade deadline. I think at that point, someone's gone. If that happens, and they don't right the ship by then, someone is gone. I don't know if that's Dell. I don't know if that's Gentry. Could very well be both.
So I guess my question there is if that happens, are you basically resigned to the fact that AD is gone, or is there a way to give him the total reins to decision making next summer and keep him?
Well, that's got to be the total Hail Mary, right? Sure. So if you got rid of the staff, both you know the GM and the coach, then that's the Hail Mary. It's like, all right, we're just gonna try to one create as much cap space as we can, so you kind of call the shots on the players, the type of players you want, and B, like you know you tell us who you want to bring in and we'll bring them in, and then that's the sell. It's like, all right, you have that level of organizational control, but then that also begs the question: is like, why haven't we really involved Davis to that level before yet? Which, yeah. You know, like players are players. They're not GMs. And, you know, we've seen all countless former players on TV just talk garbage. Well,
and who knows if he even would have wanted that. Because right. Haven't we heard more than once that he's not – he hasn't gone out and recruited guys, which is, you know
– He brought in Randall.
Yeah, and that was kind of the first thing we've heard. I don't know.
I feel like he's talked to a lot of players before. He's just not very – again, he's not a very – public player, it's all private, and I think it's kind of naive to assume. Not saying you're naive. I'm saying in general, it's naive to assume that these guys don't talk and have these conversations.
Yeah, but I'm saying like if you can be super doom and gloom about it and say, "Hey, AD talked to Randall and said sign for 1 year. Let's get you numbers, get you paid, and then we're both out of here. I mean, like, there are, who knows what these guys say to each other behind the scenes. I don't think that's what AD said to him, but I also can't tell you it wasn't. So it's just it's really tough to know what these guys are thinking. Not that AD hasn't said all the right things, but I don't know.
Yeah. Tough to know, but you know, I think that's the last it's sell, and then you know, you create as much cap space as you can. So you're like, all right, AD, let's see if you can go get this max caliber dude that's in free agency, which is not going to happen. But that's the thing. It's like, all right, you give him that opportunity. Can you go get that guy? Can you make this home? And if that doesn't happen, it's bye-bye.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, to do that, as we've said each of the past few years, that it was already hard enough to even make that sell when he only had, like, 2 years left on his deal. That just ain't going to fly. Until he signs on the line that is dotted, you know. I mean, I wouldn't commit to this franchise if he wasn't committed long term. I mean,
yeah, for sure. I mean, so, but that's the thing is, like, you know, that's why he's bringing in someone. It's like, you're committing, I'm committing. It's not going to be like, ah, oh, you're coming, see ya. You know,
yep.
That's why you let him call the shots. I don't know, man. I think there is. If I had to put odds on it, I think there is a greater than even chance that someone gets fired before the end of the season. With the way things are going, I think there's a greater than even chance someone's gone.
Is there any way you see, and I think this might change at the end of the year regardless, but is there any way you see Dell getting fired and Gentry keeping his job?
Long term, no. Short term,
yeah, through the season.
Short term, maybe. Yeah. Short term, maybe. I mean, they might let him finish the season then.
Because I think if you're really still thinking about AD and you're trying to figure out any way you can to get him to stick around, I think if you're gonna move on from someone based on what you're seeing on the floor right now, I think it's Dell, and then you let AD kind of decide the fate of Alvin Gentry. Not that I think I would fire either one at this point, but
imagine having that responsibility and then like dipping on the franchise anyway.
Yeah. Ugh.
it's possible.
Tough.
Fun times.
Well, the Bulls are likely to waive campaign.
Ugh. Like, seriously. If people clamor for that guy, they're like, cut Tim Frazier, you guys don't watch basketball. You're just asking for more misery.
Facts. I was a little curious to see if they would cut Jabari Parker. I didn't think they would, but I put it at like 1 or 2%. But hey, you never know. I'm kind of surprised they're keeping him and not cutting Brooks. But and they're both bad, so I guess it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Anywho, I feel like we've covered a good bit of ground. It's not fun. It's definitely not as positive of an outlook I had last week. I mean, I'm still pretty positive that we can get stuff turned around in the long term, even if it means Davis leaving. But this, it's going to be ugly unless they, you know, they pull the home run trade.
Yeah.
And I think whatever move they make next, because I know that pick is as good as gone. If they don't trade that pick, then you know sure as hell that they're trying to save up all their assets for when AD's leaving. But whatever move they make next is going to be very, very telling of what their next plans are. And that's my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because, I mean, like it or not, the more this team loses, the better that pick gets. And or the value of that pick. Who knows what it turns into once the draft happens. But it's increasing in value, which could be it will be enticing for other teams if they think that the Pelicans can't figure this out, even with whatever player they would add in exchange for that pick. But I don't know. It's I'm really scared to see what happens at this point.
Scared? I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited. Let's do it.
I can't even say I'm cautiously optimistic anymore. I'm just cautious.
Yeah. I feel that.
Sweet. Happy New Year, man.
Happy New Year's, guys. I hope you enjoyed this pod. It's a fun one. I think we're going to call it, Dave.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.